Hello, this is David Wilcock. It's Saturday, August 2nd, 2008, and I've decided to do another audio blog for my website, divinecosmos.com. I'm happy to have you here with me to listen today because we're going to be talking about the ongoing, interesting, unfolding process of what appears to be a social and galactic shift that we're going through. Ultimately, it's a shift that affects the Earth in terms of Earth changes. It's a shift that's actually affecting the entire solar system in much the same way that we're seeing on the Earth. And as we get more and more complex, it becomes shift in consciousness in the sense of all the hidden pockets of negativity in the world coming up for review, so we can see what's been hidden for so long and cleanse it. It's the cleansing of that negativity in ourselves, which is actually one of the most important points of all. And it also is cleansing of our relationships with others, of course, on a personal level, and, of course, in greater levels of society as well. That's what's happening. Then, of course, you also can look at it from a microbiological level in terms of DNA. One of the things that I've contributed to this field is a comprehensive analysis of how DNA is actually energetically affected by these weird energy fields that the Russians call torsion fields, which so far have been almost completely overlooked in Western mainstream science. So if these kinds of things interest you, if you're starting to notice that the world is not as conventional as you've been led to believe all these years, then you've probably come to the right place, because this particular show is going to focus on things that have just been happening the last couple weeks since we did the last show, and I want to be able to give you my perspective, which has gathered quite a lot of attention. So first of all, I'd like to read an article to you, at least parts of it, which came out on Yahoo, among other links. This was from the Associated Press by Alan Fram and Eileen Putman, and it kind of helps to set the tone of where things are right now. The article is called, "Is Everything Spinning Out of Control?" And it goes like this. Dateline, Washington. Is everything spinning out of control? Midwestern levees are bursting. Polar bears are adrift. Gas prices are skyrocketing. Home values are abysmal. Airfares, college tuition, and healthcare border on unaffordable. Wars without end rage in Iraq, Afghanistan, and against terrorism. Horatio Alger, twist in your grave. The can-do, bootstrap approach embedded in the American psyche is under assault. Eroding it is a dour powerlessness that is chipping away at the country's sturdy conviction that destiny can be commanded with sheer courage and perseverance. The sense of helplessness is even reflected in this year's presidential election. Each contender offers a sense of order and hope. Republican John McCain promises an experienced hand in a frightening time. Democrat Barack Obama promises bright and shiny change, and his large crowds believe his exhortation, "Yes, we can." Even so, a battered public seems discouraged by the onslaught of dispiriting things. An Associated Press Ipsos poll says a barrel-scraping 17% of people surveyed believe the country is moving in the right direction. That's the lowest reading since the surveys began in 2003. An ABC News Washington Post survey put that figure at 14%, tying the low in more than three decades of taking surroundings on the national mood. An ABC News Washington Post survey put that figure at 14%, tying the low in more than three decades of taking soundings on the national mood. Quote, "It's pretty scary," unquote, says Charles Truxall, 64, a retired corporate manager in Rochester, Minnesota. Quote, "People are thinking things are going to get better, and they haven't been. And then you go hide in your basement because tornadoes are coming through. If you think about things, you have very little power to make it change," unquote. Recent natural disasters around the world dwarf anything affecting the U.S. Consider that more than 69,000 people died in the China earthquake and that 78,000 were killed and 56,000 missing from the Myanmar cyclone. Americans need to do no more than check the weather, look in their wallets, or turn on the news for their daily reality check on a world gone haywire. Floods engulf Midwestern river towns. Is it global warming, the gradual degradation of the planet's weather that man seems powerless to stop? or just a freakish late spring deluge. It hardly matters to those in the path. Just ask the people of New Orleans who survived Hurricane Katrina. They're living in a city where, 1,000 days after the storm, entire neighborhoods remain abandoned, a national embarrassment that evokes disbelief from visitors. Food is becoming scarcer and more expensive on a worldwide scale due to increased consumption in growing countries such as China and India and rising fuel costs. The can-do solution to energy needs, turning corn into fuel, is sapping fields of plenty once devoted to crops that people need to eat. Shortages have sparked riots. In the U.S., rice prices tripled and some stores rationed the staple. Residents of the nation's capital and its suburbs repeatedly lose power for extended periods as mere thunderstorms rumble through. In California, leaders warn people to use less water in the unrelenting drought. Want to get away from it all? The weak U.S. dollar makes traveling abroad forbiddingly expensive. To add insult to injury, some airlines now charge to check luggage. Want to escape on the couch? A writer's strike halted favorite TV shows for half a season. The newspaper on the table may soon be a relic of the internet age. Just as video stores are falling by the wayside as people get their movies online or in the mail. But there's always sports, right? The moorings seem to be coming loose here, too. Baseball stars Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens stand accused of enhancing their heroics with drugs. Basketball referees are suspected of cheating. Stay tuned for less than pristine tales from the drug-addled Tour de France and who knows what from the Summer Olympics. This is not the first time Americans have felt a loss of control. Alger, the dime novel author whose heroes overcame adversity to gain riches and fame, played to similar anxieties when the U.S. was becoming an industrial society in the late 1800s. American University historian Alan J. Lichtman notices that the U.S. has endured comparable periods and worse, including the economic stagflation, i.e. stagnant growth combined with inflation, an Iran hostage crisis of 1980, the dawn of the Cold War, the Korean War, and the hysterical hunts for domestic communists in the late 1940s and early 50s, and the Depression in the 1930s. Quote, "All those periods were followed by much more optimistic periods in which the American people had their confidence restored," he said. Quote, "Of course, that doesn't mean it will happen again," unquote. Each period also was followed by a change in the party controlling the White House. This period has seen intense interest in the presidential primaries, especially the Democrats' five-month duel between Obama and Hillary Rodham Clinton. Records were shattered by voters showing up at polling places, yearning for a voice in who will next guide the country as it confronts the uncontrollable. Never mind that their views of the current leaders are near rock bottom, reflecting a frustration with Washington's inability to solve anything. President Bush barely gets the approval of 3 out of 10 people, and it's even worse for the Democratic-led Congress. Why the vulnerability? After all, this is the 21st century, not a more primitive past when little in life was assured. Surely people know how to fix problems now. Maybe. And maybe this is what the 21st century will be about. A great unraveling of some things long taken for granted. Okay, that's the end of the article. And I think what it does is it gives us a really good portrait of the complex array of pressures that the average person is now weighing out in their own mind as they look at the situations in the world right now. I do want to point out that this article clearly is biased in favor of McCain being the next president. And you can hear that in the line that says, "The sense of helplessness is even reflected in this year's presidential election. Each contender offers a sense of order and hope. Republican John McCain promises an experienced hand in a frightening time." Now that's the key line. An experienced hand in a frightening time, meaning trust him because he has the background and he'll be able to take care of you. Democrat Barack Obama, the article continues, promises bright and shiny change. That's clearly something that's intended to sound like it's not very realistic, like it's fool's gold. And his large crowds believe his exhortation, "Yes, we can," implying that these crowds are somehow delusional. Now, again, I've taken a lot of heat for Obama. It's one of the things that people really seem to be charged about. Unfortunately, when you go into the alternative conspiracy media, as I would like to call it, you see almost a unilateral hatred towards him. There's almost never an article that's written in the alternative conspiracy press in which Obama is portrayed favorably. And even when I've been on the radio and tried to talk about this on other shows, there's a propensity for people to want to cut me off or to edit out that part of the talk afterwards, et cetera, et cetera. Now, look, I'm not really a big politics person. But what I have had as an experience is that there's not a lot of people right now who are putting out intuitively derived information that has reliability and quality. And my track record is unimpeachable. I feel that you can look at the evidence, you can read the books that have been written and the website in various places and see that I have clearly established validity in what I'm doing. And in many cases, back in the days when I took clients, I had a very reliable success rate with them in the sense that people would only give me their name and their contact information, and we would have a time that they were going to have this session with me, which was what I called dream reading. And then on the day of the dream reading, I would have a dream for them. And without knowing anything else about them, the dream would go into astonishing detail in almost all the cases of stuff that was important for their life. So by the time they called me, I would have analyzed this dream and I would have had a better sense of what I was dealing with. The reason why I bring this up is that these dream readings that I used to do definitely established that I had this ability. There are multiple, well, some 500 odd witnesses of people who actually had this service for me. I would basically be able to recall these dreams because I've been doing that since 1992. That was the year that I stopped using all intoxicating substances. And that was a spiritual decision that I made, which I feel was very helpful to me in my journey. So although I'm no longer taking clients, and of course I would be absolutely inundated with demand if I did, what I can do is continue to have these dreams every morning. It's very rare that I miss one. And they're still quite thorough. In fact, I get about 2 dreams a day on the average because I do at least 2 sleep cycles. The first sleep cycle is usually between 4 to 5 hours in length, sometimes a bit longer, sometimes 6 if I'm lucky. The second cycle is usually 1 hour, maybe a little more, maybe an hour and a half. And that's really all I need. It was the Jane Roberts material, the channeling that she did from an entity calling itself Seth, that clearly established the idea of 6 hours being the maximum that you'd want to sleep at any one time to get the greatest intuitive and health benefit from it. A lot of people don't want to hear that because they like to plow through and do 8 hours at a shot. But what I end up doing is, as soon as I wake up a little bit and I can remember something that happened to me in a dream, unlike just rolling it over as most people would do, I get up, I get out of bed, I sit down at my laptop, and I type in the dream. What I do is I start out the night before when I go to bed with a journal entry that has the day of the week and then the date and then a dash. And so when I wake up, all I have to do is type the time. And then I start typing the dream itself, which I do in a bulleted list. And by putting in a bulleted list one sentence at a time, each sentence is a different element of the dream that can be analyzed. And I do that by putting in another bullet point underneath with brackets. And the brackets help me to see the difference between analysis and the dream. And then if a dream seems to be really important, I'll go through and I'll actually insert headlines in each section so that I can categorize it easier. Now, bear in mind that this has produced some really, really phenomenal results. It wasn't uncommon for people to burst into tears on the phone when they would discover that, in fact, they had been seen by me on this intuitive level. And so this is not something you hear every day, but there are starting to be more signs in the mainstream media of the fact that some people can do this. And one notable example is a television show called Medium, based on a real-life person who you can find out about when you rent the DVDs and watch the special feature section. And she was able to use her dreams primarily, along with an intuitive ability, in waking life, sort of a telepathy and precognition, to be able to help the, I believe it's Phoenix, Arizona Police Department, solve murders and other crimes. And in many cases, she would be given dreams about the nature of what was going wrong or what had gone wrong, and would then use this information to solve the case. And each episode of the television show obviously works around these concepts, and many of those episodes are based strongly on real things that happen. So this is starting to go mainstream. However, there is this scientific predisposition to think that all this stuff is nonsense, and people who are skeptics have a tendency to be very arrogant and very set in their ways about what they believe, and project that arrogance with a level of ego that for people in our field, and you know, metaphysics and higher consciousness, would be considered scandalous if we ever started to sound like that. And yet these skeptics are given free rein on television programs and so forth to sound just completely self-absorbed and lacking in basic human respect for those that they're criticizing. So again, you can't let that kind of stuff drag you down. The mainstream is a controlled entity, as more and more people are aware, and it doesn't have to frustrate you. You can just look at it as it starts to give testament to the fact that what you're dealing with in your life is a whole different thing than what you were conditioned to accept. True reality is a lot different than what we've been led to believe, and actually that's not a bad thing. At first, when you find it out, it might come with some sort of sense of shock and disappointment. It's easy to look on the situations in the world with a jaundiced eye and believe that we're all going to hell in a handbasket, to see that there's earth changes coming, all the kind of things that you were hearing about in this article that I just read to you. But the very fact of the matter is that as you go to a deeper spiritual level, you start to find out that we actually live in an orchestrated reality. This reality is not random cause and effect things that are happening. Now, there is cause and effect. That's true. But the cause and effect that I'm speaking about happens at a higher level than what you would normally ever imagine to be possible in the mainstream reality that you've been led to believe is true for however long you've been conditioned by it. Now, many people are breaking away from that conditioning and they're starting to see beyond the limitations. This is not a bad thing at all. This is a very positive thing. Because as you awaken to the fact that there is a greater reality, with that sense also comes trust. Honestly, if you were to just take a straight-ahead appraisal of what's really going on in the world without any sort of blinders or shields or denial, it's utterly overwhelming. It can be very, very overpowering. And in my case, I took psychedelic drugs when I was basically late in high school and then early in college. And for my own peace of mind, I can say that I would never, ever want to do this again. I don't know why I did it as many times as I did. I did about 20, 25 trips, it seems like. I don't really remember how many. But I know that every time I did it, I had some really profoundly uncomfortable experiences. And most of that was due to the fact that I no longer had these blinders over my eyes about what was going on in the world. It became easy to see that we had a lot of problems, that there was a lot of things that were going on that were really disturbing, and it wasn't really clear what we could do, if anything, to stop them. Another thing that happened as a result of these psychedelics that I took was that I started to have very strong visions and memories of some sort of extraterrestrial connection to my own life. I don't say, again, that this is what you have to do in order to experience something like this, but in my case, it helped open the door. As is so often the case with people who become chemically dependent, I got to the point that I couldn't really be happy without using, and a lot of people are stuck there now. It's important to remember that if you're involved in chemical dependency, which you may not want to call it that, almost always what you're really doing is self-medicating against reality, the reality that you see in front of you. It's a lot easier to use an intoxicating substance to gain a sense of peace of mind than it is to actually work through the issues that are right in front of your face and actually come to a peace of mind from a responsible, sober consciousness. When you use a chemical to gain peace of mind, what you're really doing is just throwing away the problem and not dealing with it and giving yourself sort of an artificial way out. This is actually really detrimental spiritually, and what it ends up doing is it causes your problems to sort of circle the wagons so that before you know it, they've gotten worse and worse and worse. In a very real sense, we're dealing with an entire civilization that has addictive behavior in many forms. So it's not just chemical dependency, that's one level of it. But another very, very common form is codependency, and I'd like to talk about that for a minute. Of course, all the things I've raised starting at the beginning of our conversation will be included in what we're talking about here. I'm not going to drop any threads, so just bear with me. Codependency is essentially what happens when you begin to project your own sense of divinity onto another person. What do I mean by that? Ideally, we all remember, and this is why I say ideally, that we are one with the Creator, that we are one with the cosmos. In the ideal frame of mind, we have a conscious understanding that we're all one, that there's an intelligence to this universe, that there's an order to the way that things happen, and that that order has not abandoned us, that we are connected with it and we are fundamentally a part of it, and that always will be the case. However, it's true that when we go through painful and difficult experiences in our life, it's often quite easy to lose track with that sense that we are loved and protected and guided, and feel that somehow we've been cast in the trash can, rejected, stripped of our prestige, stripped of our honor, stripped of our pride, and left to fend for ourselves in a world that is hostile and uncaring about the basic things that we hold most dear in our own lives. And the more that you look at what's going on in the media and the government, and as prices go up and it's becoming more and more difficult to afford the basic things that you want, it's getting more and more of that feeling as if all the things that are positive and all the things that have kept us feeling nurtured and supported are going away. And this is where leaders, as we call them, are able to step in and take on sort of a masculine energy projection of the alpha male, basically turning the energy of the pack towards the threat of a predator and getting the energy of the pack to surround this alpha male with its support so as to be protected by the predator. The idea is that if you can focus everybody on the predator, then their issues and their concerns and their worries within their own mind become singularly directed towards that one problem for a period of time. And then, if that problem is solved, if the predator is defeated, or even if the predator is just fended off from the entrance to the cave, let's say, then, of course, everyone goes through a great relief, and there's a great satisfaction that lasts for a period of time before the problems start to come back and they start to repeat once again. And then everybody goes back to being paranoid, and then you have to have another encounter with the predator and everybody feeling threatened by the predator before they will again reach a sense of happiness. Now, this is how the pattern gets started on an animal level. There's a variety of pressures. The animals may have trouble finding food. They may have trouble finding water. It may be too hot. It may be too cold. Anything like that can happen. And then if all of a sudden there's a wolf at the front of the cave and the wolf is threatening to drag you away, suddenly all those other things you're worrying about don't seem to matter so much. Now your focus is on just surviving on a very, very visceral level. So, of course, it shouldn't be that difficult to see that our governments use this mechanism very well. They're able to channel all of our focus into a singular adversary and believe that if we can defeat that adversary, that we're going to have much more safety and security. After World War II, the Cold War was concocted out of a erroneous belief that Russia was preparing to invade Europe, when in fact they'd torn up all their railway systems and had no plans of doing anything like that. And a missile race was then launched, which the Russians had to adopt to because of the fact that now they were being threatened. So over and over again, we have had this situation where the government has tried to utilize this animal herd mentality to their own benefit. And granted, you can understand their level of cynical sarcasm because in many cases it has proven to work. people will immediately hand over their civil liberties and their freedoms and their rights if they feel that they're being threatened, so that the protector can do what he needs to do, regardless of how unethical it may be in a higher sense, in order to ensure that they're okay. That's why right after 9/11, everybody was saying, God bless America. They didn't say, God bless humanity, or God bless the world, or God bless all people. They said, God bless our country. So it was an effort to drive home the idea of greater nationalism and so forth. So here we are in this unique moment in time where these codependent patterns are also becoming more and more evident in personal lives of people. And before we get back into the political and into the 2012 subject, I want to talk about personal codependency because I think it's very important. When you are engaged in an addictive behavior, what you're basically doing is you're trying to find some sort of satisfaction from an outside source. In the case of drugs, alcohol, etc., what you're doing is allowing yourself to take a respite from the way that your thoughts normally are and go into a chemically induced state of happiness. When it comes to codependency, what you're doing is you're looking to someone else and you're hinging everything about how you feel loved and you feel supported and you feel about yourself on that person. So if you wonder if you have codependent problem, the easiest way to tell is how hooked in are you to a person or to people in your life in the sense that how they think about you and what they say about you strongly affects how you feel about yourself. Are you the type of person who needs to have conversation with people that are close to you all the time? Because if you have any length of time where you're really silent and alone, you start to feel really, really lonely and depressed and miserable and weary. Are you the type of person where if you spend any length of time by yourself, that you can't help but pick up the phone or send a text message or send an instant message or send an email or click on the internet or do something to distract yourself? Well, what happens if you actually give in to the silence? What happens if you don't go online or send somebody an email or call on the cell phone or call on your home phone? What happens if you just sit there? I want you to really think about that because, in fact, this is where you're closest to yourself. You may not like what you see. That's part of the problem. Because when you're codependent, you're really, really hinging too much of your own sense of satisfaction and purpose on someone else. And the bottom line is that most people don't like that. And it will cause you to have failures in your relationships and your love life. This is not an easy thing to get over because you will feel as if that other person is responsible for why you're in such a bad mood, for why you feel so down, for why you feel so negative. In fact, it's very common that within our own minds, we take all the array of problems that we have in ourselves, and we turn that person that we've now gotten codependent onto as if they were the predator at the front of the cave. And we now have to be the alpha male who defends ourselves from that predator, and when we do so, we feel better. We can actually use what I call tension resolution cycles, where we have this tension inside ourselves and we don't know why, because we haven't really done the work to sit with it long enough to really figure out what's going on. Then because we have this tension, we start nitpicking the people around us. We start looking for their flaws and seeing the problems that they have. Before we know it, we've jumped on something that they've done that we can say, well, this proves that they're not loving me. This proves that they're not supporting me. This proves that they're causing me all this mental distress and anguish. And then we begin basically attacking and confronting them about this. Some of us may do it directly with a statement. Others will use a passive-aggressive technique where they start walking too hard on the floor, making banging noises, or they'll start slamming cupboards in the kitchen, or they'll start pacing around the house, or walking up and down the stairs too fast, or any number of things, odd behaviors, gestures, and so forth. Ultimately, either way, it does lead to a direct verbal confrontation. And in that verbal confrontation with the other person, a lot of times what we end up doing is we're looking for them to break. We're looking for them to do something that is actually genuinely unloving. And unknowingly, a codependent is actually goading that person. You're actually poking at them and you're making them angry so that eventually they will be angry and they will say something unkind. In many cases, what codependents do once that happens is that they reorient the entire discussion around what just happened, what that person said. Oh my God, I can't believe you just said that. I can't believe you just said that to me. How dare you? How dare you? How dare you? Now, none of us have ever had this happen in our relationships. So when that happens, what we do is we reframe the argument, and it now becomes that other person's fault that we feel so terrible. And we end up forcing them to apologize, and sooner or later they do, in most cases. Otherwise, if they don't, then the relationship will quickly start to fall apart. If they do apologize, then they give us gestures of affection, gestures of love, and temporarily we feel better. If it's a sexual relationship, you'll have make-up sex. But this little high only lasts for so long, and then you're right back into the misery of codependency again. And I don't recommend that you stay in this path at all if this is what you start to see in yourself. And you may also be the person who's listening to this seeing your partner more than you see yourself, and that's cool. It's probably true, but don't forget that you do it also. And if you didn't do it, then you wouldn't be involved with this person. So one of the ways that we can break this cycle is that we learn to have greater self-respect. This is very important. To learn to respect yourself is to learn that you don't have to take this kind of abuse from other people. Nor should you be so hinged on them to feel good about yourself. When you learn to respect yourself, you learn to respect the alone time that you have with yourself. And that's not a bad thing. When you're alone with yourself, you can start to be creative and you can start to do something with your time that's constructive. As you do creative acts, you are becoming the creator. You are becoming part of the co-creation of this universe. Because the reason why this universe started out with individuality and separation was so that each of us could experience our own means of evolution, creating our own path, creating our own way through all the things that are happening to us, and generating new value for the creator. So if you're just living your life reading what other people have written and watching television or just basically consuming media without actually generating anything, then that in and of itself is sort of a problem. Now, if you generate harmony, that's the best. So you don't have to actually be a writer or be a painter or be an actor or a sculptor or any of these other things. I'm not saying that. The most important thing we do is generate harmony and fraternity and fellowship with people around us. That is our greatest gift. That is what we have been given to enable us to be truly resourceful in fulfilling the plan of the universe, which is to reunify as one from this sense of separation where we all have free will to live our lives however we choose. So we're in a grand awakening right now on the planet. And this grand awakening in many cases does involve realizing how codependent we've become, because this codependency is also not just something happening in our personal lives, it's happening on a global level. We're seeing more and more evidence of the traditional systems breaking down, that we can no longer be satisfied by the offerings from the mainstream. And one of the clear signs that this is changing is what happened with Edgar Mitchell coming out just a couple weeks ago, not even, with this disclosure on a British radio program called Kerrang about the idea that, in fact, UFOs are real, and that he experienced this knowledge directly by talking with people who had firsthand knowledge of it. Now, I think that if you were expecting something to happen, this was just about a week ago that this came out, you would be disappointed, obviously, because the media didn't really have much of an impact on this knowledge. It pretty much rose up and then it sunk back down again. But that's okay, because this is something that happens over time. It's not happening all at once. But what we are seeing is this gradual movement towards the truth. And so as that truth comes out, a lot more people are going to start taking this stuff seriously. They're not going to be so dismissive and scornful about it anymore. And that will lead to a much greater awareness of the fact that we are not alone, and in turn, that our little game of reality here is woefully short of the mark. When you start really dealing with the fact that UFOs exist, it goes beyond an advanced technology. Certainly it's true that these ships have been able to appear and disappear, that the beings on these ships have demonstrated in multiple cases of witness testimony very advanced psychic skills, telepathy, levitation, telekinesis, healing power, etc. Then you also have to deal with the fact, as has been revealed in many, many testimonies, that we have a situation where the other people that are visiting us are essentially human. You have probably seen any number of movies in which extraterrestrial beings are shown to be grotesque, disgusting, horrifying, threatening, venomous, etc. This is a hoax. This is a myth. This is not the reality. If you really look at the highest quality testimonies going back through history, time after time after time, you're seeing very clear evidence that the predominant number of sightings people report are always humanoid in nature. Now, granted, there are some fringy books here and there which talk about beings that do not look human at all, but that's the minority. And from various witness testimonies, including people who I've interviewed myself and who have been interviewed by Bill Ryan and Carrie Cassidy on ProjectCamelot.org, the reality is different. The reality is that at the higher levels, we know, such as through Sergeant Clifford Stone as one example, that there's some 57 different varieties of ET that have been identified by our inside government. And of these 57 different varieties, every single one looks essentially human. And when I say this, what I mean is, we know from other witness testimony that they vary in height from as short as about a foot and a half tall to as tall as roughly 12, 13 feet. And most of them look very similar to humans as we know them here on Earth. The skin colors vary. Sergeant Clifford Stone mentions that some of them have green skin, actually. There is a testimony in Dr. Stephen Greer's book, Disclosure, from an inside source who calls himself AH, and he's aware in there of a human-looking species that has an orange-colored skin. Now, this is not bright orange or bright green. We're talking about, in this case, essentially Caucasian-looking skin with a hue of green or orange. But again, whether you're dealing with short guys or tall guys, you're dealing with people who more or less look like us. In some cases, the eyes are larger. Most of them actually do have hair. Apparently, blue eyes or green eyes are very common. Blonde hair is pretty common. There are several species that look Asian. All the major races on the Earth are represented in these different species. And, of course, you have just a wide array of people out there. So you can't really use the term alien when you're dealing with people who in many cases are similar enough looking to us that with only very minor changes, in some cases no changes at all, they could be walking around here on Earth and you wouldn't even know that they were from somewhere else. That's what we're actually dealing with. And that's one of the things that freaked out our government, because they don't know who to trust. In some cases, one of the things that an ET might have that's different from us is very, very blue eyes, like radiant blue eyes in a way that we don't normally see. In some cases, it seems the pupils are a little bit different. In some cases, it seems the teeth are a little bit different, or the structure inside the mouth. But more or less, contact lenses, perhaps a little makeup if the skin is off color by some degree, and maybe some snap-in dentures is all it would really take for some of these people to be able to walk around here on the planet. And there is evidence that they do that. So we're not really dealing with such a open and shut case when it comes to the extraterrestrial presence. We also know from witness testimony that these various humans are in most cases genetically compatible with each other, meaning that you could actually breed with someone who came from a different planet, and you could have offspring that would then grow into being some sort of hybrid between your race and that person's race. just like we can do here on Earth between races on this planet. So it's not as complex as it sounds. Different races that are here on the planet could have been put here. The Caucasian species of human, as we have on this planet, can be traced back to some 10, 11,000 years ago. There was an article that just came out in February about that, that the first blue-eyed person could be traced back to about 10,000 years ago. Everyone with blue eyes has a singular common genetic ancestor. That was in the BBC. So I really want to help to expand your consciousness about this, because what we have is these inside groups that are trying to get you xenophobic. They're trying to get you to think that ETs are dangerous and evil and terrible. And the reality is that there's people out there, there's families with children, with cultures and cities and their own means of communication, which in most cases is telepathic. And they're not bad people. In fact, many of them are here now and they're trying to help us because they understand that we're going through some really difficult times and that we need help. There is a very interesting situation going on with this planet right now. I want to direct your attention to some things that have happened more recently. Last month, there was a crop formation which actually depicted the planets in the positions that they will be in right around the end of the Mayan calendar. Now, the Mayan calendar is believed to end on December 21st, 2012, but these crop formations actually demonstrate the date of December 23rd, 2012, somewhere between 22nd and 23rd. The reason why we know this is because Mercury and Venus are slightly out of alignment with each other in this crop formation. If you see it on December 21st, they're basically sitting right on top of each other, but it's only when you move it ahead by a couple days that they go slightly out of alignment like you see in the crop formation. Now, people have very accurately seen that this is the date that's being given, and that's a very fascinating thing because it was only about a month or so before that that there was another crop formation that got very, very public online. And this was a crop formation that encoded the number pi in its dimensions. This was covered in many forms of media, and it was considered the most complex crop circle ever discovered, which is really not true, but it was certainly an interesting one that was able to be deciphered successfully. Many of them are not successfully deciphered. Well, here's the thing that you may not know. The 2012 crop circle was then extended in its scope later on. The circle makers, whoever they are, came back and made the circle different. They changed the pattern. They added a second circle next to it, which was largely just an outline. And then there were lots of small, weird glyphs next to the giant circle. And in my mind, this could represent symbols for the different species of human that are visiting us and helping us right now, just like little logos, in a sense. Now remember, the formation is dealing with 2012. When we go back into the formation itself, we see something even more bizarre, which is that the part of the glyph that was representative of the sun is now expanded in size, so that it has now engulfed the orbits of Mercury and Venus. Not the Earth, but Mercury and Venus. Amazingly enough, there is no discussion about this fact on the Crop Circle Connector website. When the formation was updated, it just was dropped. There is no Planet X in this formation. That's another very important point. So many people try to pin what's happening right now with the solar system, where you're seeing climate change on all the planets, just like the Earth, as being caused by some rogue planet that's sweeping in and altering the gravitational effects and altering the magnetic effects and the temperatures of the planets. I have never seen any evidence to suggest that this is true, and in fact, there's a preponderance of evidence to suggest that it's not true. Among other things, we can look at long-term cycles in the fossil record, of which there are two that have been identified. There's a 26-million-year cycle and a 62-million-year cycle. And I've talked about this before, and you can find out more on my website, divinecosmos.com. These represent times where all the species on this planet suddenly upgrade in a very short period, geologically speaking. Their ancestors disappear, and new species are formed. Now, I don't want to say that this is caused by a mass death, because I don't think it is. In some of these cases, there's sudden evolutions that occur with no evidence of cataclysmic activity on the planet's surface. In other cases, there are cataclysms, so you have to make that distinction. what appears to be happening is that DNA can be rearranged into a different species, so that when you have that species who's been zapped, so to speak, with the new energy, their offspring will become different. And this has been proven by two different Russian scientists. The first one is Dr. Tizian Konchazin. Yeah, say that three times fast, right? And what he did is to zap a duck with microwaves, basically, and then redirect the beam into a pregnant chicken. And when the chicken laid its eggs after 5 days of this zapping going on, the eggs were half duck, half chicken. The species that was born was a new species. So I've often wondered about the duck-billed platypus because it looks kind of like a mole, but then it has features of clearly what appear to be a bird, and there's really no other species like it in the whole world. It could be that there was some sort of lightning strike in an area where there were moles and ducks, and that that lightning caused there to be this coming together of two different types of species. So anyway, I just want to point out to you that this is real, that the fossil record is not Darwinian evolution. Darwinian evolution cannot explain sudden leaps in the way that species look, because there's no gradual evidence of how they went from one form to another of any real substance. It's been heavily debunked by a wide variety of scientists, and that's another thing that you just don't get in the mainstream. The mainstream seems to be very successful in suppressing any evidence that would tell you that there are divine causes in why you are the way you are and how your life is being lived. In fact, my colleague Richard Hoagland told me that they, meaning the insiders, consider this knowledge about the consciousness field to be so important to keep secret, they would rather lose an American city in a nuclear exchange than give up this information to the public. That's pretty shocking. And I don't doubt it, because if you look at the evidence, there's people going all the way back to Tesla and John Keeley and Wilhelm Reich, etc., who prominently put together scientific models that explained that there's this new energy field in the cosmos and how it can be utilized. And in almost every single case, their work is dismissed. They end up being attacked, and they end up having their knowledge scattered to the wind. Our insiders have not wanted there to be any sort of free energy technology, because they have a disdain for basic human life, in the sense that if the average person had free energy and they didn't have to work to earn money anymore, they feel that everyone would just sort of sit at home and watch television and do nothing, and society would sort of stop functioning. Now, that may or may not be true. It could happen for a while, but I don't think it would be destructive. The truth is that the level of technology that's out there and the things that are really available to us are so over the top that science fiction doesn't even usually come close to explaining it. A typical guiding point of science fiction writing is that you only introduce a couple alternate elements to a world that is otherwise similar to the one that we know, and that's how people are able to get in there and identify with it. Where the reality is different, the reality is that you have all these different people who are being created by the galaxy on different planets, and they look like us. They look enough like us that you would be comfortable with them in the room. Now, granted, they're not all like that. Some people have larger heads, smaller bodies. They wear these sort of sunglasses, if you could call them that, which is a lens that they pop over their eye to protect their eyes because they're very light sensitive. And underneath those lenses are eyes that look a lot more like ours. But again, people are xenophobic, and that's the focus that's been made in the media on UFOs, is these beings that are compared to insects because of the large and black eyes, which again, the blackness is not the way the eye is built. It's a protective device that they wear like a contact lens. So underneath that lens, it looks more like us. But again, that's the minority. Most of them do not look like that. Most of them actually do look like us. And I heard about this going all the way back to the year 1993, when a close friend of mine told me that it was common knowledge in the higher echelons of NASA that UFOs had landed, that Roswell was a real incident, that there was one live ET that was brought out from that incident and held in captivity for a period of time. that it was interviewed and questioned, that we gained technology from the Roswell crash, and that this technology included such things as fiber optics, LED lights, Teflon, Velcro, computer chips, laser beams, and other technologies that we still don't have, such as anti-gravity, teleportation technology, etc. It is true that there are ancient Stargate systems. You can look at shows like Stargate SG-1. You can look at the end of the movie Contact and watch people going through this roller coaster ride of a wormhole. That is true. However, that's also considered an ancient system, and it's dangerous. These systems cause people to often go schizophrenic, especially if they're not adequately prepared for what they're going to experience before they go through. But there's also energetic effects that cause people to have problems, and this is something that we've heard from different insider testimonies in terms of what we know about the reality of what we go through. The technology has been upgraded so that now we have what one insider witness calls a jump room, which is essentially instantaneous regardless of the distance that's traveled. There's very little, if any, discomfort in the process, and you basically go from one place to another, just like that. So again, most other people in the galaxy already are using these technologies, and it's the preferred way to travel for many reasons, but ships are also used, because in that case, you can bring things with you, and you can have a visitation, so to speak. So it's a whole lot different from the way you look at it in the movies, and when you start to see that DNA itself couldn't exist without some sort of intelligent influence, it becomes clearer why there are humans on many different planets, not just the Earth. DNA is not a random effect. It's so complex, it's like the entire Encyclopedia Britannica's contents, caused by dropping a series of individual letters from the sky, and all those letters arranging themselves into the full encyclopedia of text. That's how ridiculous it is to think that DNA could have formed naturally. Furthermore, we know from various experiments that have been conducted that life can form from non-living material. This includes such things as distilled water. There's a scientist named Pacheco who takes ordinary beach sand, heats it to white-hot luminescence, so it's totally sterile, there's no life in it, puts it inside a sterile test tube with sterile distilled water in it, so there's no way that any contaminants could get inside, and yet this scum grows on the top of the tube that he calls a surfactant, and when you scrape that scum off and look at it under a microscope, what you find is little critters that have grown in this sterile environment from nothing. That's what's happening deep under the Arctic ice. That's what's happening in the meteorites from other planets. And in fact, Francis Crick, one of the guys who discovered DNA, analyzed the spectrographic signatures of dust in the galaxy and found that 99.9% of all the dust in the galaxy has all the spectrographic signatures, the light signatures of bacteria. So life is not some anomaly that happened on this one little planet in the middle of the galaxy here. Life is something that is abundant and prolific everywhere you go. And it will form over and over again in every situation, and it is being intelligently guided through a curriculum of evolution, with its end purpose in this galaxy being the creation of human life that looks more or less like us. And because the galaxy defines the DNA template, we are genetically compatible. So when we go and visit people on other planets, we can mate with them and have offspring. And again, in most cases, the people on a given planet all look pretty much the same. What we have on Earth with this degree of racial diversity appears to be the blending of some 16 different points of origin of where people's genetics originated from on other planets. So we have a very rare and unique situation here on the Earth for that reason. And as was stated in the Law of One series, which I consider to be an authoritative work given to us from higher intelligence, we find that each planet goes through a series of three cycles of 25 to 26,000 years in length, and this is again driven by galactic energy forces. And at the end of these three cycles, the planet has moved out of third density, which is this level that we're in now, the level of consciousness and level of matter and energy, and moves into what's called fourth density. It doesn't skip from fourth to fifth. That's a misnomer. It goes from third to fourth. Now, third density is a spiritual level more than anything else. In this galaxy and in a few of the neighboring galaxies, it is a level in which we learn by having a human form, and that form continues all the way up through fifth density. By the time you get to sixth density, you're really more like an orb of light. You could project yourself as a human form, but that's not really what you look like anymore. But for all intents and purposes, 3D, 4D, and 5D are basically human in this galaxy and a few others nearby. Why was the form chosen? Well, it's a great form. You have the eyes above the nose, you have the nose above the mouth, you have the ears on the side of the head, so they're out of the way. The spherical head is the best form so that if it gets damaged or dented, that it doesn't crack open. The limbs with the opposable thumbs, the fingers, the walking on two feet, all these things are very effective means of being able to intelligently interact with your world. Also, we are told that the hands, as they've developed, were intended to get us focused on tool-making activity rather than mental telepathy as the primary means of communication. And that forces us to go through this sort of industrial phase where we can lose touch with our spirituality and our true essence and get sucked into the material world. So again, what happens is the galaxy sets up the game on all these different planets where you have human life form. They get pushed through these three cycles. At the end of each of these 25, 26,000 year cycles, people can graduate to fourth density. And then they will usually come back to the planet once all the third density cycles are over. Now, this graduation is actually a very phenomenal thing, which I call ascension on the website, divinecosmos.com. And this is a process that doesn't happen all in one sudden moment. It's a cosmic transformation of consciousness that you direct to a large degree. It's based on your participation. So even as you listen to me talking to you right now, this is what's happening to you. You are changing, you are growing, you are expanding, and your consciousness is moving through various levels of truth and understanding. Again, the galaxy is just part of the cosmos. It's a co-creator with the cosmos, and it gets to have its own choice of what bodies will be used on the planets and what archetypal experiences we will all go through. There's a total of 22 archetypes, which are pretty much distributed more or less the same in the underlying principles throughout the galaxy. I'm sorry, throughout the universe. And throughout the galaxy, everybody on every planet goes through the same spiritual lessons. Other galaxies will vary some of the particular style with which these different 22 archetypes are managed, but they're all pretty much based on the same templates. So you have seven archetypes of mind, seven archetypes of body, and seven archetypes of spirit. And then you have one overarching archetype that sort of unifies the others together and represents the person who's just beginning the quest of enlightenment and initiation. Now, these archetypes are represented in two key forms that we have here on Earth. They have been seen in the tarot cards, in the what's called major arcana, the 22 cards that are given words like the tower, death, etc. You also can see them in the Kabbalah. The Sephiroth, as they're called, is another example of where these archetypes came through. And in the Law of One series, they were given the choice between the Kabbalah or the Tarot, and they chose the Tarot to study the archetypes. They could have gone either way. That's the way they chose. So again, we're not going to get too focused on that. The idea is that you can have all these different experiences, and you will have all these experiences. And if you can master them, then you really have attained a level of enlightenment that is quite profound and can carry you through just about anything. So as you live through your life and as you experience more and more of these changes, we can also look at the fact that we are at the end of the third density cycle here on this planet. That is a fact. That is a fact that is backed up with so many interconnecting threads of evidence that when Edgar Mitchell starts coming out in the open and saying that UFOs are real, he's just scratching the surface. You have crop formations which are bent but not broken, showing signs of being heated by some sort of microwave source that we don't have any technology that can duplicate here on Earth. We now have had a formation that has come down recently that shows us the end of the Mayan calendar, just a couple days after December 21st, 2012. And then the second formation shows the Sun as if it had expanded in size to the orbits of Venus and Mercury. Now, I do not believe that this means the Sun is literally going to expand out to the orbit of Venus. What I do think, though, is that it's showing you that this is an energetic effect that's happening in 2012 related to the Sun. Again, there's no 12th planet, there's no Nibiru or Planet X or anything like that in this diagram. The Sun's expansion represents an energetic change. It represents an increase in frequency. And then, of course, you have the second circle that's nearby with all these glyphs showing different ET races. So this is the kind of disclosure we've been waiting for. We have a disclosure on the human side from Edgar Mitchell, and now the media is even more favorable around UFOs. And now you have a disclosure from the celestial side where you're getting this crop formation showing you 2012. It should be pretty obvious that there's something to this date, that this is not a fantasy, this is not speculation anymore. Why couldn't it be possible? We know that there's documented evidence of things like the Bermuda Triangle where people go through some sort of energy vortex and they are seen to disappear. Ships pop out the other end, nobody's on the ship anymore. They've all just disappeared. So we know, and there is concrete evidence, that people can transmute. And of course, when you start talking to people who are insider witnesses in these black projects, they're very aware of it because they've lived it. They've actually gone through these systems that teleport you from one place to another. It's commonly used in the higher levels. So once we know this, it changes everything. Because everybody says to me, one of the most common criticisms we get online is that, oh, well, David is telling you that you don't need to worry about the Earth changes and he's luring you down the garden path. Well, okay. All I can say is that because I've been in contact with higher intelligence myself since 1993 when I started to do the dreams and so forth, actually the end of 92, I have never been getting messages of doom. I have never been getting messages telling me that I should be afraid, that I should be concerned about physical survival. In fact, the Law of One series makes it very clear that those changes are not where the focus needs to be. Granted, here's what I recommend if it concerns you. I recommend that you store food. I recommend that you store water. I recommend that you have candles in the house. I recommend that you be prepared, because you don't know when something could happen in your area. Depending on where you are in the world, you could have various forms of earth changes that could come up on you. You could have temporary power outages. You could have an earthquake. You could have a tornado. You could have a flood. You could have a drought. You could have a temporary food shortage in your area. You just don't know. So I recommend that you do prepare. And I'm not saying anything outrageous or over the top. I'm just saying basic, simple, practical things. And once you've done that, I recommend that you just put it on the shelf and not obsess about it and not think about it. So I'm not telling you to just sit there and do nothing. What I am saying is take reasonable precautions and do it with the consciousness that is not attached to the doom and the fear and the sense of oppressive loathing of the future. Because the future is very positive. All the things that are happening on the planet right now is part of the Creator's plan. This is not a train that's running off the rails into doom and disaster. That's a very common misnomer. I find it hilarious in many cases that people want to argue in favor of doom and gloom and don't like this message. I guess it's because they're very dissatisfied with their own lives on the planet, and they think that if the planet dies or goes through some horrible cataclysm, that we're somehow going to be cleansed and healed by that. Now again, I don't consider myself to be naive, I don't consider myself to be irresponsible in telling you that we're dealing with a positive series of events. The events that are happening do include cataclysmic activities. Those activities jar us out of our complacency and get us more focused on the spiritual quest. That's what their intended purpose is for, and it works. So in that sense, these things are happening, they are real, and you should be prepared for them. I don't want you to focus on it. I don't want you to get too terrified about it, because the best way that we can help the planet is to maintain a coherent consciousness within ourselves. Again, I want you to think back to the fact that people in general are spread all throughout the galaxy. They originate on planets by the galactic plan, the way the galaxy set up the DNA molecule, which is the galaxy's construct. Those people, in many cases, have been drawn to incarnate here, even though they no longer need third density learning. The level of third density is a very low level consciousness, relatively speaking, in universal terms. Because all you really have to do to graduate from this level is to decide whether you want to support people or whether you want to manipulate and control people. So if you choose love, then you go to the positive side, and if you choose control and separation, then you go to the negative side. It's very straightforward. Now, the problem is that most people on this planet are stuck in the middle point. They're not really choosing to be totally evil, and they're not really choosing to be totally good. Codependent is a classic example. A codependent is a person who hinges their emotional needs on you. Or if you're doing it, then you're hinging your emotional needs on someone else. And if that person doesn't treat you the way that you expect them to, then you become offended and you become horrified and you feel that it's their responsibility for you to feel better. And then because you're pulling on them, it causes tension and causes animosity. Now, this is a self-serving behavior. It's important for you to take responsibility for your own emotions so that you're not pulling on the people around you for your support. It also is very important that you learn to just balance and breathe, because in your able breathing, you're getting self-respect, you're getting love to flow through you. And when I say able breathing, I mean there's a difference between breathing like an animal and breathing with ability. Because when you breathe with the ability that you're given, you have a consciousness that is in the air all the time that you are merging with. The air is part of you, it's part of who you are, and it actually does have this consciousness energy that will affect you in a positive way. So that's why this is a time where you want to be focused on how you can best help other people. Because right now is a time that everybody is pulling together, and there are many, many souls that originated on other planets who have volunteered to incarnate here in human form again, not remembering who they are or where they came from. And most of the people I find who are on my site who are following this stuff, which probably means you, is one of these people, are one of these people, let's say. So if that's true, if you might be this wanderer, as they're called, then you have to look at your life in a different way. You look at the fact that you've always felt alienated, you've felt different from other people. No longer is that a weakness, that's actually a strength. The primary reason why the wanderers are here is not to save the world, although many of them feel that that's what they have to do. They're here because they are on a mission to simply radiate love and light. It sounds absurdly simple, and in many ways it is, because what we're dealing with is a consciousness field where the way that each person thinks and feels in their own mind is not something private and isolated. The way that each person thinks and feels emotionally is a product of their surroundings and their environment. It's so important. It's one of the main things that my film Convergence is going to be talking about. And I very much hope that you will see this film when we release it. People are always asking me, when's it going to be ready? I can tell you that we are in rewrites right now. We're working with Catherine Ann Jones, who's an award-winning screenwriter. She's the author of the Touched by an Angel television series. And we're expecting the draft to be completed no later than September 1st. We do have investors lined up, ready to commit. So it looks like things are moving forward. Just to take an aside here, I'm getting about 3 or 4 pitches a week on music. Everybody is sending me their music and saying, please use this music in your film. Obviously, we're not going to be able to do that. I don't have time to listen to the music. We're also getting at least 3 or 4 people a week saying they want to be in the film. I'm not in control of the hiring. That's the director's discretion, so I have no control over that. Anyway, in the grander scheme of things, there's people coming here who volunteered to be human at this level of third density. They didn't need to be here. And when 2012 comes around, it's the end of the contract. Now, are there going to be cataclysms after 2012? Absolutely. The world as we know it is more or less going to be destroyed. I'm not denying that. What I am saying, though, is that we're not going to be here when that happens. Most people. Now, it's only very recently from Dan Burrish's testimony and some others that I've discovered that some people will actually stay at the frequency of the physical Earth when it goes through these cataclysms. That's a very small number, and that tends to be the people who have hidden out in underground bases or in government facilities or in off-planet facilities, etc. They are allowed to go through this chaotic transformation. And in fact, there are timelines in the future where they have evolved and come back and are claiming that they're having problems with their genetic lineage. Now, again, this represents a very small percentage of humanity, and the descriptions that we get of these beings in many, many ways is a perfect mirror of what we hear in the Law of One series about the so-called service to self or negative path. The way that they treat people, where they say that they relocated to, namely Orion, all these things dovetail so precisely with what's in the Law of One material that it's basically a one-to-one correlation. So it's kind of ironic that the entities that we're having the most trouble with in terms of ETs and them causing these abductions and stuff is actually the very same people running the inside government right now who have then evolved in the future into a more negative configuration and are actually falling apart. Their DNA is withering, and they're traveling back in time to try to fix the damage. Now, they believe that this DNA damage is caused by there being a cataclysm in 2012 that pretty much wiped out most of the planet's population, that the only way they can solve their DNA problem is to travel back in time and gain genetic material from us to try to strengthen their genome. The Law of One series has a very different interpretation. It says that when you're on the negative path, your DNA will literally start dissolving if you don't go positive eventually. And this is because DNA is actually supported by an unseen energy field that's the consciousness of the galaxy. And if you don't have an alignment with the loving consciousness that the universe is founded on, then eventually that energetic component to DNA gets cut off and your DNA is no longer supported and you start experiencing degenerative conditions, which is exactly what these human time travelers from our future are experiencing. They're experiencing a condition known as degenerative neuropathy, which is causing them to shrivel up, and in many cases this is where the insect-like form appears to be coming from, is the way that they kind of have this tendency to lean over and their limbs to be crippled. Again, they could solve their problems, but the only way they're going to is by shooting over to the positive side, which can actually be done very quickly. To open your heart and to let the love in doesn't take a whole lot of time. It's basically realizing that other people are not ignorant and foolish, that they actually have value, they actually are worthy of your love and respect. And by simply making that choice, these beings would very quickly experience an amazing healing. Their degenerative conditions would turn around. They would have the ability to live fuller and healthier, happier lives. And then they would start to also realize that just because they only saw a future where a small number of people survived these cataclysms doesn't mean that everybody else died. It appears that most of the people on the planet, as 2012 comes around, will shift in frequency, and they will be moving to a different level of the Earth, which we call time-space. Now, granted, in the Law of One material, this is labeled as death, but that's a very misleading term because when most people think of death, they think of something painful and traumatic and horrifying. Technically, by splitting hairs, you can call it death, but in another sense, at this level of frequency, you could reconstitute your physical body whenever you wanted to. So it's much more akin to ascension because you flipped over into another level where you have the abilities that you do in a lucid dream. You can levitate yourself, you can heal other people, you can communicate telepathically, you have telekinesis, you have time travel capability. All these things can be done in the place that the Earth is going to. And again, this isn't even really the ascension path as much as this is just where the average person is going to go. This is just the in-between phase. The ascension path is much more intense because what it represents is sort of the tallying up of your entire lifetime's worth of experience on this planet into forming a singular level of benchmark, a of how far you've progressed as a spiritual being. That is the true essence of what the Law of One series calls the harvest process. And again, people get all freaked out about harvest. It just represents the idea that the earth is being cultivated, that we're cultivating growth in consciousness, and at the end of the cycle, it all goes back to source. We all go back to our family. We go back to our true home. We get to see how well we did, and then we get to try again at whatever level we've now evolved to. So the hope is that a lot of people will be able to graduate into fourth density positive, where they will be able to experience the earth as it moves into this new realm. Now, the earth is habitable on another level of frequency after 2012. This means that we're not going to be living on the physical earth as it is now. The physical earth as it is now will, for a period of time, be uninhabitable for life forms like us. And this is due to a variety of factors, but there will be a great cataclysm that will sweep over the earth after most people are gone. And human life wouldn't really do very well on the earth after this time for a while. But there are other planes of existence that every planet has, and the fourth density plane becomes fully habitable. This plane will also have vegetation. This plane will also have various forms of life other than human. This plane will also have glorious fields and mountains and streams and lakes and oceans and rivers and all the things that we've grown accustomed to here. It's just that it's at a different level of frequency. So it's a frequency that is actually coexisting with us now, but we can't see it because our vibration isn't fast enough. It could be existing right in the room with you, and it often does, but you wouldn't be able to partake of it at this point. Some people can. Some people are seeing ghosts. Some people are seeing beings of light. I'm getting more and more of your emails coming in talking about the things that you're experiencing, the things that you're witnessing. So what I'm trying to do is to just encourage you to not go for the negative, because you can go there if you want to. You can be paranoid about the economy. You can be paranoid about earth changes. But the truth is that it's a happy ending, and you can roll with the changes, and you can move towards an ever-increasing level of positivity. That's the promise. That's what we're being led through. Again, I do see that Obama is someone who's been guided by these higher forces to a degree. Doesn't mean he's a messiah, doesn't mean anything like that. Just means that he's one level of many, many levels of an initiative which are designed to help push the planet towards greater awakening and greater truth as we head towards this event. So, again, I thank you for listening. I'm not even counting the level of email that I'm getting anymore, but it's very, very large. It's at least 120 a day. I regret that I don't have the time to answer your letters personally. I don't have the time to call you on the phone. I never call anyone on the phone. I get lots and lots of phone numbers. I don't have time to listen to the music. I don't have time to da-da-da-da-da. So this is what we got. We have audio blogs where I'll be able to talk to you like this. I really do thank you for your support. Feel free to send me your email. I do try to read most of them. It's just difficult to answer because there's so little time. A lot of cool stuff going on, and it's been a pleasure to speak with you. I look forward to our next encounter. There's a couple things that you should hear about in terms of upcoming events that I have. I am going to be speaking at the Dowsers Conference. This is in Vermont. This is the weekend of August the 8th, so it's coming up very soon. You can go to dowsers.org and look up the conference. I have two events there. I have a keynote address, and then I have an event the following Tuesday. And you can actually book just the event on Tuesday in Vermont if you want to. So if you want to see me in person and you live on the East Coast and you've heard this sometime this weekend, which is right around August 2nd, August 3rd, you do still have time to get there if you want to. I also do have a conference coming up, which is on a cruise ship. The fee that I'm charging for people on that cruise is astonishingly low. I get a very low cut because I didn't want to make it expensive. That's the Mexican Riviera. I have 3 full days of lectures on that cruise. You can contact Kevin Fitzgerald. His phone number is 951-805-1820. That's 951-805-1820. Or you can email him at Be Travel Savvy. That's BETRAVELSAVVY. Be Travel Savvy at AOL.com. Kevin Fitzgerald is his name. That is one of the first weekends in November. I believe it's the weekend of November. Well, it's a whole week, but it's like the second week of November, basically, is when it happens. I also am going to be speaking at the Bay Area UFO Expo. That is coming up in, I think, October or September, somewhere in that neighborhood. That's in San Francisco, California. That's just going to be a single event, not a very long event. But again, the numbers that we have are overwhelming. Every other person in this field, all the people that are regulars on Coast to Coast with George Norrie, we outsold all of them at the big expo that we had here in LA recently in February, the one that you see the 2012 Enigma video from. So people are really catching on. We've actually become one of the most popular voices in the UFO metaphysical movement on the internet. And I thank you for your support in making that possible. We have so much free stuff on the site. We really encourage you to tell your friends, because everybody is becoming more and more concerned about what's going on. And this is a message of hope, and it's a message of truth. I would never mislead you. I would never tell you something that was only part of the truth of what I really know. I really do see that there are higher beings that are protecting us and guiding us, that we're being led through a transition, that what appears to be so scary is intended to wake us up out of our slumber and our complacency, so that we're willing to start being more engaged in our spiritual process and moving forward with our lives in a positive way. So again, I want to thank you. Thank you for your letters. Thank you for your support. If you'd like to give me a knock on the door and let me see you as a person, you can write me on MySpace. My MySpace address is /divinecosmos. Again, don't expect me to answer, but you can just let me know what you look like. I prefer that if you want to write me something of any length, that you do it on my regular email address, which is on the website on the contact page. The website is divinecosmos.com. But anyway, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I look forward to the next time. So thank you, and Godspeed.